Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
The following podcast has some fruity language. Sorry, my bad. So take care of who's listening around you.
Kia ora e te whānau and welcome to It's Personal with me, Anika Moore. This is my podcast where I get personal with some really great, interesting people.
And I remember talking to Antstar when I first got cast in the role as well, who had played my brother on Shortland Street. And he...
Oh my God, that's so twisted. I love it. That's so New Zealand.
Yeah, exactly.
So from my brother to my lover.
Yeah, from my brother. I remember when he hopped on the bed for our first sex scene when I was Aurora and leaned over and we just went, hey sis.
My guest today is Claire Chittam. She's played a huge range of characters, but is still probably best known for her first big role as Waverly Wilson on Shortland Street, and also she was Aurora on Outrageous Fortune. She joins me to talk those iconic roles and her journey to wellness. You've had a really long, illustrious career, right?
Have I?
You were Waverly on Shortland Street like when you were 14 or something.
Yeah, no, that's, yes. Yep. Long? Long career.
Illustrious.
Yeah.
Illustrious.
Thank you. I'll take it.
I've watched pretty much everything you've done, except for that movie.
The Falling in Love.
Falling in with two N's. Love. I haven't seen that yet, and I know it's on Netflix.
You can save that up for when the 12-year-old is 14. Apparently that's the key age.
Are you?
That's the key age demographic for that film.
Oh, so there's a few kissing scenes then.
No, there's like, no, actually. Oh, no, there's
my
nothing.
I won't watch anything with kissing in it.
Oh, that's great. I don't want to give away the ending, but the only kiss in the entire film is right at the end.
I just love that it's falling in love, because it's obviously about an in.
Because she wins
right?
An in. Loves me.
Are
a
you
good
the mum?
No! I'm the best friend who works at the garden centre.
Oh, so did you have to do an American accent?
No.
Come on.
I know, it's unfortunate because I do a great American accent, but the American comes to New Zealand.
Oh, okay, so you're all Kiwi.
We were all Kiwi.
Were there any Māori people in it?
Blair Strang plays the gay baker.
I'm Māori gay baker. Can you show me your American accent?
No.
Come on, just show me it.
No.
I can't do it, so I'm just...
I know, it's more funny to listen to you not do it well.
I'm seriously trying my hardest to do the best American accent I can.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
That was pretty good, Jessica. Well done.
Thank you so much. Look, it's like real deep.
Yeah.
Come on, give me one.
You can't move your mouth very much because everything happens inside the mouth. It's not really like... I'm not going to do it.
That's good.
I'm not going to do an American accent.
Do Scottish then.
I know. No, you can't.
Well, that's good.
Oh, my God.
Give me one little word. Okay, come on.
If I could talk in an accent for my entire life, it would be Irish.
Really?
I love the Irish accent. This is not what I was ready for, so this is terrible, but...
Oh, shut up and do it.
I did a movie in Australia with Brendan Gleeson. Do you know, he's Mad-Eye Moody in Harry Potter.
Mad-Eye Moody?
In Harry Potter. Yeah. And we had to have training, like proper Irish training, which of course I can't remember. But I just feel like if I could talk in any accent my entire life, it would be Irish because it's lyrical and beautiful and everybody sounds lovely when they're doing it. And they just sound like they're really sweet and kind and nice and like you'd want to hang out with them. Right?
You should do an Irish movie.
I am, sorry. There's a movie called The Cup, which is about the Melbourne Cup, and Brendan Gleeson is a
you're talking about
horse trainer. Sorry, I
was too blown away with the accent. I wasn't listening to the story.
Oh, I'm getting hot and bothered. No, he was like, it was one of my favourite career highlights, was sharing one scene with him.
Yeah.
One scene. And it was about the Melbourne Cup.
So you have one scene in that movie.
Yeah, so I've done an Irish accent on screen that can be found. I've done American.
What else?
I've done Kiwi, I've done French, I've done a lot of English in
theatre.
You've
done Westie.
I've done West Auckland.
Aurora.
Yes.
Outrageous Fortune.
That accent.
Everyone remember that? Or what? How many seasons? 7 or 8? There were heaps.
That's a great question. I think there was maybe 6.
Six.
It feels like there should have been more.
You know, I reckon Aurora was one of your best characters.
Oh.
And I've seen every single episode of Outrageous Fortune. I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan.
Awesome.
And I just think your acting in that is so brilliant.
Oh.
It's so brilliant.
Thank you.
How do you even get into the mind of this character? What did they say? Just drink fucking Lion Red and get your fanny, you know, like, because it was amazing.
No, that, I loved that job. I still love that. Oh, you're right. I think that show's still one of New Zealand's greatest achievements. And
it is New Zealand's greatest achievements.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You know?
Thank you. You said I will.
I just want, because two things. The writing was brilliant. The acting was brilliant. It's all you need.
And I think it was also a reflection of a side of New Zealand that we all, A, recognise about ourselves, but B, actually love about ourselves. Like, it's kind of the grubby basic side of you that we all have.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that was wonderful about watching The Wests was that it was a family unit that was bound by blood above all else. Mm-hmm. So there was absolute commitment and love there in a family way. But it was a group of people that were allowed to behave badly.
Yeah.
And
they
lived outside of, you know, society's sort of norms, and they were allowed to break the rules.
Those
and we got
rules.
To watch them break the rules. And so the first season had come out, and I when I auditioned for Aurora, I knew the show. We'd all watched season one already, and I had adored it as well.
Yeah.
So I knew the world that I was going into. Mm-hmm. I knew what would be required of me. And I also knew, because I had only just maybe, it was only maybe 2 years earlier that I had exited Shortland Street and stopped being Waverley. And I was 24, 25.
When you got the role?
I was about 24, I think, when I finished on Shortland Street, and I was 26, I think, when I got Aurora. And I'd done a lot of theatre, and I'd been doing some other things, and I'd become a Pilates trainer because I was terrified. I was never going to work in this country again. And I remember getting the audition and going, this one's mine. Like, this feels like the... I knew who I was as an actor, or who I wanted to be as an actor, and that my, like, my kind of capacity or desire to play a variety of characters. And I also was very aware that the nation, so-called, sort of knew me as this, you know, as Waverley.
Sweet, but a little bit dim.
But not the smartest of the bunch.
Naive.
Very naive.
Yeah,
beautifully
kind.
Naive.
Yeah.
And, you know, young, and sort of even, I spoke in a high voice when I was her. Like, she spoke very fast and high.
I remember. Well, I've watched a lot of Shortland Street.
Well, thank you. And a lot of people have. I think that at the time I was very, I had that sort of ambitious drive to shed the skin of Shortland Street.
Okay.
And now at the age of 45, I am, and this show is still alive and it still holds a great place in people's hearts.
What did you learn from working with all the amazing actors that you worked with? What did you learn from doing that role, because you're from Waverley, who's nice and naive, to Aurora, who's a little hobag rootman and hoot.
Well, Aurora ended up having a heart of gold as well. She just happened to be a gang girlfriend. I did do a fair bit of research, actually, as a committed actor
then.
I knew some people. I chatted to some people. Not only that, I wanted to do respect to that world.
Also, you're creating a character.
Yeah.
It's not just the writing, right? You inhabit that character.
Yeah, and Mark Beasley, who's the producer on the show, one of the lead directors on it, and I remember talking to Antstar when when I first got cast in the role as well, who had played my brother on Shortland Street. And he...
Oh my God, that's so twisted. I love it. That's so New Zealand.
Yeah, exactly.
So from my brother to my lover.
Yeah, from my brother. I remember when he hopped on the bed for our first sex scene when I was Aurora and leaned over and just went, hey, sis.
I lost,
and then you have to
lost the plot
make
laughing.
Love to him.
Yeah.
But that is about as kind of bizarre and weird as sex scenes are anyway. So it was very funny and it broke the ice. Okay. And but we did a lot of work together before I started shooting Aurora too, because it was like we kind of knew that Van and Aurora's story was meant to be Romeo and Juliet. I knew going into playing Aurora that I was preparing to try to dispel people's opinion of me.
Okay, or, you know, actually consciously
I knew what
of
I
that.
Absolutely, yeah.
Cool.
And I remember the first scene that I shot was so difficult and embarrassing. Even though I was 26, which now sounds really young, I was surrounded by 18-year-olds and lingerie models, and I was having to model in the Hoochie Mama underwear contest. And that's where I think Van first sees me. And I was having to be all hot and sexy. And, you know, nobody needed to see Waverly being sexy. That was not who that character was.
Waverly, though.
And all of a sudden I was, having to do this other thing and basically dance like a stripper on stage in front of a lot of people. And I remember the director, Mark Beasley, coming up to me at the end when we'd finished shooting that scene. And he was like, nobody's going to be thinking of Waverly now, babes.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, thank you. I hope not.
Yeah. Hey, can we talk about, you know, your personal health battles? Crohn's disease.
Yeah.
So there's three things I want to ask you about it.
Okay.
Because I'm really interested. One of my friends has got it. Still got it.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
What exactly is it? How old were you when you were diagnosed, and how did it affect your childhood?
Ooh, I don't think I've been asked that before. That's great. Crohn's disease is an inflammatory bowel disorder.
Okay.
It's where parts of the either large intestine or small intestine become permanently inflamed. So you know how you can just have a bad gassy day, and there's IBS, which is irritable bowel syndrome. So that's a problem that can flare up, but it can go away.
Okay.
Crohn's disease is like the more permanent chronic version of all of those.
How old were you when you discovered that you had it?
Yes, I was 12. I was complaining of pains whenever I was complaining of pains, and my mum thought that I was starting to get my period.
Okay.
So she had me on the Ponstan, which was an anti-inflammatory back in 1990, whatever.
Good old Ponstan.
Yeah. And it wasn't doing much, and I'd eat, and then talk about like body trauma, right? I can still remember the feeling of the pain that would start to occur in my gut, and I would go away and crawl and lie down on my side in a bed with my knees pulled up to my chest and hide from people while the pain passed, and then it would sort of slowly dissolve away. And
was
then
that
it kind of
your
back.
Food trying to get through?
Yep.
All this inflamed digestion.
It's like it's trying to pass through a highly inflamed and like damaged area of the colon. So for me, Crohn's disease is intense cramping and pain when you eat, and then your body has no ability to process nutrition and absorb your nutrients. Because I know this could go on for hours.
No, please.
But no. What I was going to say is what we now know about the gut is that obviously I used to think of it as like a metal tube that you eat food and it just goes through it.
Yeah.
And, or not metal, but something curly. And now we know it's like a sponge. And everything that we need to be healthy and all the things that our blood and our brain needs to function properly gets absorbed and then sent out through our system through the gut.
Okay.
So that's what we now know. And that's why gut health is
so important.
Now we know how important it is to our brain health and our entire whole health.
Well, I didn't know that. So
well, luckily, I got Crohn's when I was 12 and then got real sick when I was 20.
Yeah.
So
it really affected your life.
Yeah. So I guess as it affected my childhood, when I was 12, 13, I was in a lot of pain. I lost a lot of weight. I was anemic. Mm-hmm. I've got a photo of me looking very pale and gaunt and skinny starting my first day of high school and my uniform falling off me, and I was a size 8 and I'm not a size 8. And then, but I got put on medication and I had to take three huge pills three times a day. And I was in my mother and father's care. And so I guess the pain started to get under control.
Yep.
Things felt okay. And on I went with my teenage life.
Yeah.
Cut to 17, 18. I'd moved out of home. I got my role on Shorty Street. I was in charge of looking after myself. And stopped taking the pills because who wants to take that? Didn't know anything about the illness. Mm-hmm. Wasn't educated on it. And started to get pains back. Mm-hmm. Ignored them. Because we're real good at ignoring
pain. You were partying. You were living
I was having a great time. I was eating my takeaways every night, drinking a 1.5-litre bottle of Coca-Cola a day, eating the sugary treats at 3 while I was doing my 12-hour-a-day job at an intense level, and then partying all weekend because I was 22 or whatever I was, 20, 21, 22. And, yeah, I reached breaking point. And so I was crippled over in pain at a boyfriend's house, and he freaked out and was like, I'm calling your parents, because he didn't know what to do with me.
Could have called 111.
Yeah, call didn't think about calling that. Calling your mum. And I got taken into hospital the next day because the inflammation levels in my blood were too high and dangerous, and I was about to need surgery, and they were going to do a bowel resectioning surgery, and my specialist at the time was an amazing woman who had started to specialise in Crohn's, and there wasn't a lot of information out there back then.
Okay.
But there was more than when I had been 12, obviously. And so she tried me on a new drug that night, and it worked.
Wow.
And it started to take the inflammation down, so they kept me in hospital for like 6 days on a drip. And after that, I was on really high doses of steroids.
Okay.
Like anyone who's had chronic illness kind of ends up on something like prednisone, and you get a puffy face, there's a lot of water retention. Mm-hmm. I still had to go back to work and put my puffy face on national television. So there was a lot going on, but one of those mornings the doctor walked in to the hospital, and when she walked in and said, look, the drugs are working, so we think we can prevent having surgery, but you're going to be on a drug for this for the rest of your life. And I had this really loud voice in my head that went, fuck no.
Mm-hmm.
And I still remember that, and I don't know where she came from, but she stayed loud. And I just remember from that point on, I went on this very focused, it was all that mattered was my journey to fix this problem. And that determination was coupled with the fact that I was earning great money in a job that I adored. Like, I had found my vocation, and nothing was going to stop me from being an actor and being on TV and doing the thing I loved.
Yeah.
And this thing was about to stop me.
Okay.
And because I had to have 6 days off work instantly, and that you mess with the whole schedule, you've just affected 150 people's lives. Like, the guilt of that was heavy for me. And I was determined that it wouldn't stop my future and stop my career.
So you stopped drinking, smoking, takeaways, all that kind of stuff?
All at once, yeah.
Did you?
No, who can do that?
It's like your bloody Mother Mary.
No.
Smoking, did you?
No. Exactly. But I did. I did stop smoking.
Yeah.
And actually, I will become a fierce anti... I'm definitely anti-smoking.
I am too.
But all of the other things, you know... We live in the world where they were created. And, you know, I am now a philosopher of balance.
Yes.
Philosophy of balance.
Everything in moderation.
Yeah,
that's
not
what my
everything.
Mum says, she's drinking her 15th beer.
I was going to say, not everything. Here's the thing,
yeah.
My take on that, right? I went on the journey to fix my body, and I was earning enough money to be able to start seeing people that maybe cost $160 per pop. I knew I was in a really privileged position, and I did not take that for granted once. And I could afford to start switching to eating organic food and removing toxicity and going to healing people.
But that's
but that was that took me 4.5 years
of
that until I came off my last medication for Crohn's.
So 4.5 years you're on the pill.
On all sorts of drugs to help calm that inflammation. I was seeing my gastroenterologist regularly, Western medicine saved my life and got me through.
So after 4.5 years?
The 4.5 years was figuring out how to heal my own body. And that meant physically, mentally, emotionally, and energetically.
Okay, and then you stopped taking that pill because you'd healed yourself.
Yeah, I had changed my diet. I had stopped smoking by then. For a while, I gave up dairy. I gave up things that were very inflammatory. I didn't drink alcohol, but I wasn't really drinking it already because it really messed with my stomach. Wow. And I hated how I noticed when that made me feel really sick. But I had taken recreational drugs around that time and stuff as well. Like, it wasn't like I was an angel.
No, of course.
20.
Yeah.
But, so I'm saying I wasn't an angel and I was a smoker, but I did give that up and I did stop the things that were super inflammatory and I did stop dairy for a while. And I got to a point, but I'd started doing Pilates. I felt strong. I'd built strength in my stomach where I'd never had it before. Yeah. Abs are these muscles that are designed to help prop our bodies up and protect the digestive system. I never had them before.
I tried Pilates once and I almost died.
You need to come. I will take you to Pilates.
I couldn't reach my
You
back.
Will love that. Doesn't matter. That's not the point of you just reached it, Mia.
No, I can. I've tried yoga online, but
Need to come to a Pilates class on a reformer with me. I promise. Do you like dancing?
I can't. I like dancing.
No,
I
you
can't
like
dance.
Dancing. Pilates has got a like aspect of dance where you get into.
You're trying to sell me Pilates.
Yes, because I think it's really good for people.
Okay, I'll do it. I'll do it once though. But if I get addicted, that's on you.
Yes, I'll take it.
How did your journey affect your mental health?
I guess what I back then, I felt very defined by my disease, which was horrible. If you get to your 40s, your late 30s, early 40s, and now, like, it is unfortunately a time where you just need to go, your body is going to start sending you the messages to tell you what is wrong and what it can no longer cope with.
Yeah.
So if you haven't addressed your mental health or your physical health and you've just been letting the engine run and it's, you know, it's totally the metaphor of a car with an engine, not an electric one, is a great one because it needs the right oil. Yeah. There are different oils. It needs the right food. There are different foods and it is different for everybody. And that was kind of the thing. I stressed about it for 10 years and then I got into my 30s and I was like, okay, girl, you got this far. It's okay. Like, breathe. If it comes back, you'll deal with it, whatever. You're okay. And the letting go of the stress because I'd educated myself and trialed and tested myself enough was wonderful.
Yeah.
And a relief mentally. And then I realised, you know, I'm a curious person. I've always been very careful about educating myself on the body and all, like, my curiosity as an actor has been applied to my curiosity as someone who was sick and then tried to fix myself.
Curiosity or obsession?
It was obsession when I was sick and then it was curiosity as I've gone on. What I think is important nowadays is that people, and especially you right now, you're going to get used to, you have to learn about what is good for you because it's not going to be the same as what is good for me.
Totally.
And that's going to be different for you and your partner or your kids even. And it's like, it's really important that we start to pay attention and look after our own bodies and not what everyone else is doing. Just because it's a trend or being sold to you, but actually
a lot of
notice.
People do that.
Absolutely, and that is my wish for people is that they figure out the prescription for their own health because.
But maybe we don't have time because you know people are working full time. They've got to feed their family.
Exactly.
And where do they find the time?
If you don't have time for your health, you're just going to drop dead, aren't you? So you're not going to have anything to be in a hurry for. I seriously think again, you have to get sick. To realise. How important that the health is all that matters.
But how wild is that as a society that you have to get sick to get better? Yeah. Like, how come we can't teach?
Well, it's kind of like, why can't we just stop fossil fuels and fix it? You know, it's like we're idiots.
Okay,
we are idiots and we're slow. And I think that our advancement of society is moving us fast and it's faster than nature. And nature is where we need to sit. Like, our bodies have to sit in the flow and time.
We can't.
Our bodies have to sit in the flow, and of nature because we cannot outrun it. And we wake up, you know, we all wake up to the same sun and go to sleep with the same moon at the same time. That can't change. And I think we have started, you know, we are the product of a society that was focused on the Industrial Revolution and growth at an exponential pace. And now we, especially for anyone with their own mokopuna, who we have to be the change, we have to shift that focus, which is, I think, what is happening around the conversations of even being around how is our mental health and how is our emotional health and can we all start talking about our feelings a bit more. Like, that just stuff has to happen. Yeah. But that stuff has to happen if we're going to change the way we are, A, living our lives, B, affecting the planet, and C, looking after our health.
Do you do, like, TED Talks on this? Because this is so interesting.
No. You need to go around the
country and inspire people for this.
I just get really passionate about... I don't say these things without having, like, really investigated them and educated myself. I'm saying them after 30 years of kind of studying it. And I guess I just, like, I will no longer tell somebody what to do to try to, like, people used to say, you know, what do I do to fix myself? And it's like, first of all, I don't know. Second of all, there's too many things you could try.
Yeah.
Mostly, you've got to take power and the responsibility of your health into your own hands. Yep. You get to an age where you know what the cost is.
Well, my
and
dad died of lung cancer.
Right.
He smoked his whole life.
Right.
He smoked up until he died.
Yeah, and there's just certain things that we kind of know.
Yeah.
And if you want to keep ignoring it, maybe you need to ask yourself what the part of you inside you that is ignoring it is actually trying to tell you.
I could tell everyone that answer. It's because fear. It's scared. People don't want to confront maybe a death, maybe themselves dying.
Mm-hmm.
So they put it off until they die.
Mm-hmm. And it's scary to look at that stuff, man. Yeah. It is scary to do it if you don't think you can cope with it. It's scary to do it if you don't have any support.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary if you don't think you've got anyone around you that will get it or validate your fear, because we all have such, you know, we all think that our fears are weird and bizarre and different from someone else's. Mm-hmm. And then you start listening to people's stories, which is why I like speaking about this stuff now, and you go, oh, my fear is the same as theirs, or everyone is just as scared.
What's a fear of yours at the moment?
Ooh, at the moment? I think one of my more common fears that I used to, like, that I feel like has been a driving force for me was a fear of failure,
mm-hmm.
whatever that means. You know, the old people, I've been a people pleaser and a perfectionist seeker in my life, and always been scared of failure in whatever kind of form that might take for me. But that is something that I think I've got rid of it? I hope I've got rid of it. I think as you get older, I realise it's like every day I get older and pay attention to what's going on in my life, I realise there's less to be scared of and more to be getting on with.
Yeah. To be grateful for?
Oh, yeah. All the time. I feel like I've been someone who's been quite naturally grateful from when I was about 18 or 19. Yeah. I had a real moment. I'm not religiously affiliated in any way to anything, but I had a very spiritual moment of, like, being consciously aware of my actions and consequences in the world, and, like, that
was when you were in hospital.
No, God, no, it wasn't anything as
was
like
it in a was it in a teepee?
No, yeah, no, it wasn't at all. It wasn't anything remotely noteworthy. It was just an internal, like, that kind of happened where I went, I think it was around, like, a friendship or a relationship with a guy at that point or something when I was about 18, 19. And I was like, oh, if I don't speak my truth and be honest about this right now, it's not going to be good for me or them. And then doing that and then being very grateful for the thought and the fact that I then paid attention to the thought. And it felt like a cycle of things that happened all at once.
Yep.
And I went, huh. Okay, that's interesting. We'll take that into tomorrow and test that out. And it worked again. And I think that self-awareness is obviously also a big part of being an actor. I mean, performing on stage is a great lesson for tell you what you have. You have the you that is a physical being.
Yeah.
Then you have your brain that has remembered lines and words that has to say
can't
stuff.
Can't do that.
And then you have the external you, this whoever the id or the watcher or the judge or whoever, whatever you want to call that part of you that watches what you're doing. They are watching because you're like, oh, there's my mum in the audience looking at me. And then you're like, fuck, I've got to remember these lines. And you dance between these parts of yourself in order to achieve that task.
That makes me feel really
Does it
really
give you anxiety?
Because I know those feelings. You've talked to me a lot about acting and you're a perfectionist and you Aurora was yours. Have you ever wanted to make it massive in the world? I mean, that's a cliche question, but we have dreams and desires and hopes, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, what would be your dream movie or sitcom or comedy?
I always wanted to be in something akin to a Friends. Like
oh my gosh!
When I was in the States about 10 years ago, and I was like, the sitcom world where you get to perform on a set that's a bit like being on stage, because theatre is still one of my happiest, most joyful places.
Aww.
But like in America on those sitcoms where you're on a set performing on a stage in front of a live audience and getting real laughs and live feedback and stuff, but it's on TV and you only have to work like 2 days a week and you get paid a fortune.
Okay.
That's a dream job.
I'll do it.
Can you take me this?
Yeah, but have you done those auditions? Have you lived that life?
I definitely took steps to head in that direction. I've done a bit of the hustle in America.
What's the outcome there?
It's really hard, highly competitive. Yeah. I think at the age that I was doing it was about 36, and it was like, you either, if you were 36 auditioning for the things I was auditioning for, you're either already a name. And so I was competing against, like, I think I went up for something once and I was up against Michelle Monaghan. And who was in True Detective is like, what? You look her up and you'll know her face. But I just remember being like, oh, cool, that's not going to happen. So it was highly competitive and a little bit soul-destroying. But I love being there and learning and this sort of being inside the industry up there because it's valued. You don't get people going, oh, how's the acting going? Like, people are like, are you an actor?
Like
yeah, that's what it's like in New Zealand, yeah. Are you still acting?
Where have I seen you?
Oh.
wait. What's your name?
Did your cousin work in the...
I've seen you before. Hey, Gary. Gary. Who's...
Exactly.
Who are? People are so weird, eh? It's like...
But I get it. I so get it.
And I wouldn't do that.
I've freaked out around a few people. But the I think dreams-wise, what's happened is as I've got older and learnt more and more about what I do, and I love being on set, I love the world of film and TV. It is totally my home and my people and my language. I've been spending the last sort of 5-6 years working towards directing.
Yes.
And I'm sort of trying to write something at the moment. So I'm trying to write a film and then maybe direct a film and maybe direct some TV. And I still love acting and I want to keep acting until, like, I want to be Judi Dench. Do you know what I would like? To go back to the dream question.
Yeah.
I'd like to, like, hit it when I'm 65.
Hit it?
Like Helen Mirren win an Oscar when I'm 65 for something extraordinary. Because I am now at the point where I'm like, I don't need it now. I don't know. Like, you even look at the Kate Winslet, Kate Blanchett, all the Kates, the Emily, like I'm a huge fangirl over actresses and actors and the world. But I think you look at some of them and they get to certain points, they've done a certain amount of movies and then they buy tequila companies or they're like, they start producing and they start branching out because like anyone, you get bored or you need your desire to be satiated and so you're looking for the next thing that's going to inspire and excite you.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I haven't even done everything that I want to do in New Zealand yet at all. I hope that I get to play a role in New Zealand where people go, oh, that was my favourite now.
Yeah.
Because I love, you know, people are quite split over my last ones. But it's like...
who cares what people think?
Exactly. I just... It's more about... the kind of work that I'd like to put out something interesting in each decade,
mm-hmm.
you know?
I feel the exact same way.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've evolved what you've done immensely, yes. and it keeps evolving.
Well, I stopped working on the radio. I slowed myself down so right. I can start looking after my health and only do projects I feel passionate about.
Yeah, because they feel easy when they're passionate, right?
Yes, yes.
And that feels calming on your body, and you need to keep your body calm.
I really do. I want to talk to you, just lastly, I want to talk to you about love.
Oh, God, do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know you've been married. You were married to Mikey, and I've interviewed him, and he's...
Yeah.
He's an interesting man.
He is. He's a very clever and wonderful and interesting man.
He is, isn't he?
Yeah.
Do you believe in love at first sight?
I don't believe in love at first sight anymore, but that's because I have a different view on love. I think it's not first sight.
So the young people thing?
Maybe. Maybe because we're so... Just our hormones are flying when we're younger. And now it's like, I think you're really interesting, but I need to know more. Now, I think, did we have love at first? Are you asking me if we had love at first?
No, just if you
believe in love. Because we didn't. We were really good friends for about 3 or 4 years before we fell in love. And then we had an intensely wonderful love.
I know.
And our marriage was amazing for the 6 or 7 years out of 8. And it represented a time in my life. I'm really grateful for him and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
But I was running a very fast and intense operation of a big, big flashy job. And
yeah.
I bought a house and I got married and I did all these things from like 20 to 30. Yeah. And then so when that marriage ended, I was so ready to leave the country. I had never gone and done the OE thing because I'd been working a full-time job.
Where did you live? LA?
I moved to Australia first.
Okay.
I moved to Melbourne and then I moved to Sydney and then I moved to LA.
Oh, I would have just gone straight to LA.
Well, I didn't. You couldn't just go and live there, but I won the green card in the lottery.
Have you still got it?
Yeah.
Oh!
I'm a really great catch now.
Oh, I'm going to get divorced so I can get married to you.
British citizenship, which isn't worth anything anymore.
And
a green card.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I went on my own big adventure, and I just think I wanted to go on adventures with him when we were younger, and that just didn't happen. And so I took myself on them, and I had the most incredible time in my 30s of just... I upsticked and moved wherever I wanted, and I was seeking, and I don't know what I was seeking. I was seeking the place that was next for me or where I was going to land and find, again, my own version of success. And I think looking back, what I did was I built this beautiful network of friendships and relationships in all of those places, some of which are my best friends, and I kind of can call all of them a little bit of home, you know.
Well, you've got contacts now.
Yeah, and I love, like, I go and spend 3 months a year up in LA now that we can, and now that I can, and I adore it. I love the energy up there. I find it really creative and inspiring and energizing, and you sort of get out of the rut that you can get in,
mm-hmm.
I think, or that I get in New Zealand, and with it, you get in your village, right? Like, whatever that village consists of for you. I really enjoy getting out of that and trying to kind of keep my mind expanding and my vision on what I want to, the work I want to make expanding.
And to get cheap drugs. Well, it's America. They're cheap there.
I don't do any of those drugs anymore. Ugh. I don't do any. I love. Do you know what I like?
I like a lovely green tea.
I love a good supplement. I am a supplement whore. I've got the cupboard and the shelf.
Yellow
wheeze. Pick and choose what I need from everything. What?
Where
are you getting yellow wheeze from?
From supplements.
Asparagus?
No, from supplements.
I don't know what supplements you're taking.
Oh, gosh.
But you mean yellow, like when you've had too much vitamin C?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
And it's really bright because it's really good for you.
Okay, cut. So do you think that you have soulmates?
Yes. Yes. I think, and I guess because I feel like I had such a strong and important soulmate for, you know, what took up almost a decade, I wasn't chasing finding another one. So I spent my 30s just chasing whatever else I wanted and having a grand
just
old
men?
Time.
Just men or women as well?
A little bit of everything.
You go, girl.
Thanks.
Yeah, because we can't define our sexuality.
I don't define... Well, I don't know. I'm just not... Yeah, I don't define it. And I...
Women talk a lot on dates. Like, so you go out on dates with women, and I'm a really good listener, you know?
But you're like, I have a limit.
No, no, and I will listen till the cows come home, because that's how you...
Is that going to say, is that how, that's how you reel them in? You mean that's how listen. You go home and get laid?
Pretty much. Hey, just listen to them.
Uh-huh. The more you listen, oh my God.
The more they love you. No, I'm just joking, but yeah, no.
No, to go back to the soulmates thing, I think what I mean is that I then spent the next, like, 10, you know, years just kind of making friends who feel like soulmates all over the place. And my friendships, they define me more than anything else. Mm-hmm. I think as well, like going through a divorce, my friends became my rocks. Mm. You know, when one person has been that thing, anyone who's been through that relationship, when that breaks and you've lost that thing, who I think we were each other's kind of all. That space that is left feels so huge. Mm-hmm. When it got filled with my friends stepping in and other people that were healthier relationships and more than one taking that space, I remember going, oh, this is far better and healthier and less scary. And, you know, again, fear is probably at the bottom of it. Mm. So to answer the soulmates versus and love at first sight and just love question, I think anything for me going forward now feels like when I've watched friends of mine really fall in love recently, they never think that person's, sometimes they don't even think that person's necessarily attractive at the beginning. They just might like talking to them, and then they become friends with them. And then the more they know them, the hotter they find them, and the more they love them. And that love, that to me is a deeper, truer, more filled with not just respect, but like lust and all of the other things that should or might last.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
So that's younger us would be book cover. You know, you see them and you go, oh,
absolutely. And you read the notes on the back and you're like, oh, yeah, they sound great.
Let's get in there. And now we're reading the entire
book. And now I'm like, I'm reading that whole book.
I love it.
Love that metaphor. Oh. I'm reading that whole book before I decide whether I'm, buying it. I don't know where that metaphor ends.
Is it a Harry Potter book? Because I ain't got time for that shit. Thank you so much for giving me information and being so passionate about it. You're so wonderful, and you are a brilliant actress. I admire you, and I just think you're so wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to It's Personal with me, Anika Moa. Ngā mihi to Claire Chittam for coming in and talking with me today. Cheers, sis. Also to the team that helps make this happen, Charlotte Purdy and Vanessa Hawken from Rogue Productions, Tim Watkin and Liz Garten from RNZ, and our audio engineers Blair Stagpole and Adrian Holley. Cole Easton-Farrelly is a video editor, and thanks to Jane Joyce for graphics and Brianna Juritich for production support. It's Personal with Anika Moa is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Don't forget to follow so you don't miss an episode.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.